Shavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Inspired by Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, and following Arjuna's exemplary surrender, thousands of Westerners opposed their materialistic relatives and decided to surrender to Krishna. Thus Bhagavad Gita as it is produced the same result as it produced 5,000 years ago. The illusion was destroyed in the pure devotional service in terms of understanding, practical application, and ultimate goal was firmly established. In Bhagavad Gita, we find not only the example of perfect Vedic authority, the Supreme Lord Himself, but the example of the perfect disciple as well. Arjuna's mood and surrender is the actual standard of submissive hearing. Anyone who wants to understand and apply the Vedic knowledge must follow in his footsteps. Yeah. So this mood is very, very important because authority is there. So we accept it, don't accept it, its validity is unchanged. Like that. The difficulty comes is that if we want to get benefit from it, then we have to have the right attitude. Right? So even we see an introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada saying that if you want to understand Gita, at least you have to, in theory, accept that Krishna is God. Right? Just look at it from that perspective, then it makes a whole lot more sense. Right? You don't look at it from that, then it won't work. So this element of Arjuna in his ability to submissively inquire, because we see in the conversation Arjuna has plenty of doubts, right? And he even has, you know, a misgiving of his dealing with the family members, fighting with them, and that, you know, much more emotional issue. That's how the whole thing came up. But the element of being able to express the doubt in a progressive way to get an answer so that one can properly develop. That then is how Arjuna shows, you know, a very good example. Does that make sense? So that's the way one learns. This idea of just you'll express yourself, say anything you like, you know, all that, and that's your right. It's your right if you want to not understand something. But at the same time, is it your right to annoy others? Right? So if you have a sign, you know, if you've gotten a piece of paper that, you know, the supreme annoyer of the universe, then go ahead, you know, perform your duties. But if you haven't, then there might be some restrictions, right? So therefore, the living entity, if he wants to understand anything, he must approach authority and be submissive. It doesn't mean he can't inquire about anything or ask any question. It just has to be done in a way that's actually progressive and that you want to learn. Does that make sense? Doubts aren't the problem. It's the lack of proper attitude that's the problem. Interesting how these things connect, because the other class, it's on attitude, and now this is bringing up the attitude. Lord Krishna's supremacy is established throughout the Vedic literatures. Those who disregard him are unable to render any valuable service to the human society. Quote, Sri Ishupanishad advises us to pour water on the root, the source of all germination. Worship of the mass of humanity by rendering bodily service, which can never be perfect, is less important than service to the soul. The soul is the root that generates different kinds of bodies, according to the law of karma. To serve human beings by medical aid, social help, and educational facilities, while at the same time cutting the throats of poor animals in the slaughterhouse, is no service at all to the soul, the living being. The simple method of worship of the Supreme Lord. Oh, I see, it's just gone to a smaller print. The simple method of worship of the Supreme Lord in this age of disturbance is to chant his holy name and hear the descriptions of his transcendental activities. Sincere hearing and chanting will attract the Lord's mercy upon the devotee. Okay. So, yeah. That here again, because the whole thesis in the Ishupanishad then is this Ishavasya principle. So now, as we see again, as he being the Lord, that means that any benefit that you can give to any other living entity still must be given through the principle of approaching Krishna first. Right? The element of Krishna in that relationship, that being watered, that actually makes the relationship work. Right? In other words, you want to feed so many people, nice, but unless it's prasad, then what benefit are you giving the soul? Right? You feed the body, but unless it's connected to Krishna, the living entity himself, who is the source of that body, gets no benefit. You know what I'm saying? So it would be like, somehow or another, okay, a person is in jail, okay, and so then you fix his car. Nice, okay? But he never gets to take advantage of using that car. What benefit did you do for the person? Nothing, really. Right? So that's the idea, is that if it's not connected to Krishna, the actual person you're supposed to benefit doesn't get any benefit. That's why then the preaching and those, the preaching is important because it's connected to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Preaching itself is not what the important element is. Right? Because you can preach about so many things, right? The greenies are out there in little boats and their flags and, you know, being, you know, run over by, you know, big ships, industrial ships and stuff like that. So they're preaching. Right? You know, politicians are preaching. But that's not the benefit. Real preaching means preaching about God. Right? Then you can introduce all these other elements. Right? Why is the environment important? Because it's God's environment. Right? Otherwise, just to be environmentally conscious, nice. But we could also be, you know, rock conscious. There's a rock here. We could be conscious of this rock. You know, it's a kind of a whitish rock here. You know, it's got various lines in it, and, you know, seems to be very kind of a minerally, not established, based, yeah, composition like that. But we're not, you know, of course, I guess you could also write a musical composition on it also. And, you know, it could, but, you know, so many ways we could be, but the point is but its only importance is if it's connected to Krishna. Right? Otherwise, then it's no more absurd one rock than a forest. Right? We're talking about the rock. Well, that's not exactly, you know, let's get real, you know. But the point is in the universe, then how big is a forest? You know, it's also quite small. Like that. So the whole idea is that if it's connected to Krishna, then all these things have importance. Education has importance. Social help has importance. Serving, you know, medical aid has importance. So that's why Ayurveda is so special. It's connected to Krishna. Or you're taking care of the body for health is so you can do service for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that you connect everything to him, then everything becomes useful. Right? And so basically speaking, if you're worshiping the Supreme Lord, everything else is taken care of. Because anything else that you'll do then, you'll see in relationship with the Lord. Okay, so does that make sense? Mantra 14. Oh. I have this delayed timing thing. Okay.
So, Mantra 10 and Mantra 13. Mm-hmm. So receiving knowledge. And hearing is really related to the next stages, like banana with videos.
Mm-hmm.
And but we also know that there are three kinds of intelligence and people. The first is vast intelligence, which is that people realizing things just because of the hearing. So how it's related? That means that they...
Related...
No,
what do you mean?
I mean, there's three kinds of intelligence. If you hear, you realize the first one, intelligence, and the second one, intelligence, means that you hear, you see, and then you realize. And the third kind is you hear, you see, and then you practice, and only then you realize. So how is it related, the first class intelligence, how is it related to the manana philosophy?
How is the first class related to... No, but you're going to use all three aspects. But the point is it's based on authority. So that's the important element is the shabda, is the authority. Because so just by hearing, then you can contemplate, because you can contemplate how that would apply. You know what I'm saying? And so therefore you can bring it down to, it's just like this. How many dogs do you have to hear bark to understand dogs bark? Okay, so that means even after 10 years, if you see a dog, you can basically understand it barks. You know what I'm saying? So the point is this experience has always been there. But now connecting that experience to shabda, that's actually what one's trying to do. So if one does that, one learns. One's building on experience you have. You know, because you're always doing something, so experience is always there. But the idea is that, it means experience is there, then you contemplate that, you learn from that. You know what I'm saying? But that means now you know before the next time it happens. Does that make some sense?
Not exactly.
Not exactly. What doesn't make sense? You contemplate it, you hear it, you contemplate it, you understand it.
So simply by reasoning?
Yes.
Without any practical application?
No, the practical application here. The practical application can be in, how do you say? It's confirmed, means what you understand by the contemplation then can be can then confirm through hearing, like you see here the Bhagavatam, and you see in there devotees are doing different things. That confirms, you know, what it is. You can see it. You yourself, when you do the thing, you'll experience it. But you've always understood it before you experienced it. That just confirms it. That will give you realization. You understand? Are you making this distinction between gyan and vigyan?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking here about the vigyan, the gyan. Means gyan, you can get it through hearing, right? Through seeing others or through practice. Right? So the point is here basically you're mixing the two different elements because they have some similar vocabulary. But here, third class intelligence means you've heard it, you don't believe it. You see others getting into that, having that, let's say it's a problem. Having that problem, you still don't understand it. Only when you have the problem, then you understand, oh, here's a problem. You know what I'm saying? That's third class intelligence. But you're always practicing, because so that you practice doesn't mean that that's third class intelligence. But the point is you contemplate, you understand, so then you go into the activity with knowledge. This third class intelligence means you're going into the activity without knowledge. And it's only then through that activity, then you understand that, oh, I should use this knowledge in this activity. Does that make a difference? So that's why then the study is then you contemplate it and you apply it. You know what I'm saying? Because the idea of shabda should always be brought to the stage of pratyaksha. Right, shabda, you've heard it from authority. But now, if you can see it in your practical day-to-day life, that means you actually understand the knowledge. You know what I'm saying? You don't start from pratyaksha and then try to work it out back from there. You start with authority. Then, by contemplation, you see how that authority applies in one's day-to-day life. So then, does that make sense? So then one sees. So it's one is a progressive process, the other is just living entities a bit stubborn, you know. Well, they do sometimes some so-called manana.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't know. It's this popular, I think, in seventh grade, and then I think in maybe in the first year in the university. They like to do these things, you know.
And could you explain what the how the Vedic education? Because the manana can only happen when you have a need.
Mana can only happen when you have a need for the knowledge. But the point is why are you studying the knowledge if you don't have a need for it?
You may have some interest.
You may have the interest, okay. But if you're not going to use it, why would you practice it? So that means you would only have some knowledge in the area. So it's okay. But if you're going to become expert at it, you actually have to be able to apply it.
Actually, why I'm asking, because now, I can see in the devotional society, they also use this modern method, and basically the devotees, they can hear some seminars and study some seminars, only because it's interesting, not because they're going to apply it.
Only because it's interesting.
And how to capture the... How to upgrade them to the level of need.
Okay. So they're going to the class because it's interesting.
Yeah.
But I mean, some may be going because they want to use it. Like, let's say you have a teacher's training course, they might go because they actually want to be a teacher. You know what I'm saying? Or a leadership course because they'd actually like to do some management. So you do have that, but the point is it's in the teaching process. The teacher takes the student through these levels, right? Does that make sense?
What the Vedic method of upgrading the person from the level of interest to the level of need. So then he will value this knowledge and he will have a need to...
Basically it's by association, it's just by explaining. You know, but that's why Gurukul meant living with the teacher. Because then all through the day you would see how that knowledge would be applied all the time. You know what I'm saying? That was why it was recommended one learns under somebody in that way.
The person should receive he should get some practical experience of how it's applied.
That's ideal. See, the point is for the kids, then they go to the school and they're in the school and then throughout the day, whatever they're doing, then these principles can be cultivated and applied. Because, you know, they're there, whether they understand it or not, there's somebody there that notices if they're not, and then will explain it. Does that make sense? And you get the example of how the others are dealing with it. You know, those who have more of a training, you know, how they behave and how they deal. But in the element of the adult education, then you can only make them aware that it exists, and then they have to do it themselves. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the advantage of being born into the Vedic culture, because then one is able to, from the very beginning, take advantage of that whole training process.
Does that make sense? Yes, but it's an ashram. No, but it's an ashram. So therefore, throughout the day, you can see how they behave.
But nobody pay attention to this.
That's another thing. But I'm saying the opportunity is there. It can be done. Just people have to do it.
So it's up to the individual.
It's up to the individual, but it's up to the teacher. Because he's living there with the student. But then, so what if I get into the airplane and the pilot doesn't know how to drive? No, but you get a pilot that does know how to drive. But no, but what if he doesn't know how to drive? No, but the guy that's supposed to be driving the airplane should know how to drive. No, but let's just say on the odd chance that somehow or another he didn't know how to drive, What is the use of that kind of position? Because you're asking how to do it. We said you have teachers, they do it because they live with the students. That's it. That's the formula. So the point is if you have something to do with the school, then you do that or find people who will do that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because otherwise, what ifs we can go on all day, What if the Martians attack just at Peshad time and we don't get to, like that, and they come and steal all the puffed rice, then what will we do? So it's those kind of what ifs, one can do that all day. It's very exciting, like you said, very interesting. A lot of times people keep themselves very busy with that. Friends sit around and discuss, what if, we were driving down the road and then, a UFO landed in the middle of the road, what would you do? Like that. And then they have some, I'd go up to them and say, hi, welcome to Earth, And it says, no, that's stupid, what if they, zap you with their, laser gun? Like that. So it says, I pull out a mirror and deflect it. But, what if they miss? You could go on all day like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the idea. So you don't. People don't do this. It's interesting. Yes, it's very interesting. But. What you have to look at is interesting is the beginning stage. Then you have to apply it. So the difficulty is that interesting is intellectual. The mind likes the intellectual. But then if you have a community that then to apply it in application and relationship, they're overly emotionally sensitive. You know what I'm saying? Their field of interest is intellectual, but if you try to benefit them with it, then they switch into overly sensitive emotional. Then you have a big problem. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to be intellectual, then the emotions and all that must be more controlled by the intelligence. Right? If you're dealing with rasa, then you're dealing with the emotions. So if you can separate those two, that works better. So that's why the Brahmachari Ashram, they're not in family life and all that, so they don't have to worry about that great depth of rasa that's there in the ashram. You know what I'm saying? So as a Brahmachari, they just need to work everything on intelligence and develop some etiquette. So there aren't any encumbrances that way. Does that make sense? So that's why the Vedic is arranged like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Can you mention
Oh, just another point. Then on this, we mentioned also before, as we said, that because devotees, the concept of VTE was, is that because devotees, most adults, have been through, you know, 16 to 20 years of modern education, that they would be very accustomed to that and immediately relate to it. So the idea was, what was the most efficient way to get the points across to the first generation, right? So therefore the VTE developed something that was in line with, you know, or in the concept of modern education, the form of it, but it had spiritual content. You know what I'm saying? So they're used to the classes, the lectures, the homework, you know, the presentations, the interactions, the workshops, because that's what they do in the modern educational sphere. So they'll be very comfortable doing that. You know what I'm saying? So that was the idea. Then they can come in and, you know, the course is, you know, 6 weeks or 3 months. You can come in and immediately relate to the educational process, and it works. Well, the Vedic is a very different kind of approach, because the main point you're trying to get across is not the specifically the knowledge, but the understanding and application of it. Right? Because that's the working principle. So sometimes that takes people a long time. You know, we've heard of people come here and then they'll come, you know, this year and come and sit in the classes, and it makes no sense to them at all. Right? And then it's soaked in a bit. When they come the next year, then it starts to make sense. Right? So that's why this Bhakti Shastri class runs 3 years. So that the concept of how we think and all that from the Vedic perspective can soak in. Right? The whole thing could be taught in 3 months or 6 months, but you wouldn't gain that perspective. You know what I'm saying? So it's geared like that, because for the second generation, then they have the time. Like that. And so because it's there, then adults that want to take advantage of that kind of education, then it's available to the adults. Right? Therefore that college is there. And so adults can come and take the same education that the kids get, but without the ashram training and everything like that. Does that make sense? So that's why they're there. Like that. Is that okay? Yeah. You were saying?
Understanding comes by application. They were mentioning that the difficulty is that you don't understand the need
to apply it.
Apply, yes. Apply.
Couldn't you applicate it? Yeah. That's contemplation. Right. In other words, sambandha then is the foundation for prayojana, right, and abhideya. Right? So you hear the knowledge, then by contemplating it, then you see its value, its purpose. So in the sambandha, you have to know what is the field, right? What are the elements of the field? What are the relationships? What is the purpose of each element in the field? What are the relationships between these elements? What results can you get? So if you study that field completely, then you want those results, you know how to get it, then there's interest, and so then you move forward. Does that make sense? So that's the process, is to make the field very clearly aware. Right? That's why we go into so much detail on the field. Right? Because if that's understood, then one can appreciate its application and its results. Does that make sense? No, the sambandha is, all knowledge is sambandha gyan. Even knowledge about abhideya and about prayojana. Abhideya is the practice of that knowledge. Prayojana is the result you get from that knowledge. But it can all be explained in sambandha gyan. Because sambandha is the big circle. Within that is abhideya and prayojana. It's not separate things. We do that so you see the progressions.
But it's actually sambandha. We'll find in the Shikshastaka, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this. You know that actually relationship is the basis of everything, right? You're in the spiritual world, your sthayi bhav, your relationship, is the basis of all the other aspects of rasa, right? Because if there's no sthayi bhav, then how you would have vibhav is something you're attracted to in Krishna. What would you be attracted to, right? Mother Jashoda is attracted to his being her son. So anything in relationship to that sonness, that's what she's interested in. Right? Does that make sense? Right? But it's based on the sthayibha. Then from that, from the vibhav, there's going to be an activity you do to express that affection. That ecstasy that comes from that activity, the experience, that's your anubhav. Right? That will manifest then also with emotional and physical symptoms as your sattvika bhava and your sanchari bhavas. Right? But it's all based on sthayi bhava. So until the relationship is established, how does the rest of it work? You know what I'm saying? It's just like you meet somebody, you don't know them. What do you talk about? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So if they say, oh, I'm from London, then you'll talk about one thing. You know? If they say that they're from, Khartoum, then you'll talk about something else. You know? Does that make sense? You know, if he's from London, the annoying thing is, M25. It's Khartoum, it's all the sand. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? So you ask questions to get to know the person so that you know what kind of relationship you can have with them. Does that make sense? So the knowledge is the foundation. Is that okay? So if the sambandhagyan is understood properly, then there will be the inspiration or prajumna and the desire for the result, the aniruddha. Right? So then, once that's there, you'll perform the activity. Is that okay? Okay. Mantra 14. Okay. This mantra conveys a similar message to mantra 11. In mantra 11, it said that one should learn side by side the process of nescience and real knowledge. Here in mantra 14 is confirmed that the seeker must now perfectly know the transcendental Lord as well as his temporary material creation. Right, so there's knowledge, so it's taking it a step further. Is that knowledge and knowledge and ignorance. So we've defined the position of authority. Is that you have in the Shabda, then you have authority in the way of what's transcendental, that'll be considered knowledge. And avidya will mean that which is not connected to the Lord. Right? That's your job. So then aparavidya will mean material knowledge that is connected to paravidya, to transcendence. Right? Now if that same body of knowledge not connected to the Lord is avidya. Right? So in your jnana shastras, it'll make these three distinctions. Right? Paravidya, transcendental knowledge. Aparavidya, material knowledge that's in support of and connected to transcendental knowledge. And avidya, that which is not connected. Right? In the platform of jnana, the jnana shastras, it's simply divided paravidya and avidya. So even the material knowledge is still considered avidya because the jnani doesn't involve himself in any kind of material activity. Right? Like that. So they don't engage in karma. So the difficulty is it's hard to purify themselves. So unless they're already pure, they are born like the four Kumaras or Sukadev Goswami. That's also something to remember about Brahmavadis, these guys were born Brahmavadis, they didn't become Brahmavadis. So then you need to have a process to purify yourself. So therefore, the general, what we always use then is these three divisions. So the paravidya, aparavidya, and avidya. So avidya simply means that it's not connected to the Lord. That's all. That's simply what it is. Paravidya means it's connected, that it's directly about the Lord. Aparavidya, or avidya, means it's not connected to the Lord. Right? So aparavidya will be in support of, or secondary knowledge. So you have your primary and secondary knowledge, that's the connection of the Lord. Then you have what's not connected to the Lord. Right? So in this case, the avidya can even be philosophical knowledge that's not connected to the Lord. So it's not restricted. It has to be simply, you know, something like Ayurveda or something else like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So here, then, you've separated that. Now it's a matter of the Lord and His creation. Because the avidya comes in connection with the creation. Right? There's no avidya in the spiritual world. Right? So then, the Lord and His creation, if you see them together, then you're dealing with para and apara avidya. So it's not considered ignorance. Right? But if you don't see the material energy in connection with the Lord, then it will be ignorance. But now you're getting into dynamic, more into practice. Right? You have to be able to practice it. So the first is you've gotten the knowledge. Right? So the Shravanam, you've heard what is knowledge and what is ignorance. Now you're seeing that in relationship to the Lord. Right? That the Lord Himself, then He is transcendence, and His material creation seen in light with Him also gives you transcendence. Does that make sense? So you're getting down to a practical application here. Like that. Does that make sense? Right? Because we're on the 14th verse, so it's 18 verses. So that means then you have had to have taken someone through the full process of sambandhavideya and prayojana. Right? And all aspects of it within 18 verses. Right? Because an Upanishad should be complete. So now we're getting down to practical application. So if you can see the Lord in connection with something, that's actually what we're trying to do. So it's not just a matter of, okay, we know this, we know that. It's a matter of, we know this is Krishna, and we know that is what's in connection with. Actually, it's the other way around. Yeah, they always use it. This, that, because that's a Upanishadic principle. This, that. This is here, that's there, the transcendental realm. Okay, continuing. The same is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.2, where Lord Sri Krishna says, I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. So in other words, yeah, what's beyond, what's here and what's there. But this is seventh chapter, so we see is now is being explained in connection with the absolute. Right? Before this it was activity. You have the Shankya process, you have the process of karma, you have the process of jnana, you have the combination of karma and jnana as Buddha yoga, you have the process of dhyana yoga. Right? So having dealt with all the processes, then, how do you say, who is that supposed to be applied to? So that's the Supreme Lord. Right? So now you're starting to deal with the Supreme Lord and then the knowledge of Him and all His manifestations. Right? That's what you'll be dealing with here. So then yes. Does that make sense? We see the difference between, it's the same topic, but it's just being further developed here in the 14th verse as opposed to the 11th. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. The so-called knowledge which aims at exploiting the material energy independently from the Lord is but another form of nescience. The very idea that the nature is designed to be controlled and enjoyed by mankind shows that the modern scientists and religionists are unaware of nature's real purpose, which is to be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? It's said that, you know, how you say, modern religionists, you know, said here. Yeah.
religion. So then you have God is walking with Adam and Eve in the garden. And so it's considered that that is the, you know, natural, I say, residence of the Lord and the living entities. It's not, no one thought they're happy and everything, but nothing is said about things are there for Adam and Eve's enjoyment. Right? But when everybody understands they are happy, does that make sense? Then when the material, they're kicked out of the garden, then what's there, it's given for their enjoyment. Right? So then the religionist, because religion will be you do a pious activity, you get a good result, which is something then you can enjoy. Right? From Dharma you get Artha and Kama. So then they will figure this is our right to enjoy it. Yes, see, God gave us to enjoy. But what they understand is that's for the guys that were kicked out. You know what I'm saying? The ones that were kicked out. Then that's what's given to them to enjoy it. Because that's what they want. They want to enjoy separately from the Lord. They want to act in a way that's not connected to the Lord. Does that make sense? So that means that they don't actually, so that's why it's being said here. They're unaware of nature's real purpose. No, it's supposed to be engaged in the Lord's service. But this is what then they want to do, so that's what they're given it for. Because that you can't separately try to enjoy in the transcendental realm. You have to do that somewhere else. Right? So material world is that somewhere else. Does that make sense? Okay. This so-called knowledge is actually avidya, or nescience, because it views the material world as a place of permanent enjoyment. Actually, the material world is dukkalayam ashashvatam, or place of misery where everything is temporary. To have such an understanding is a sign of knowledge, and any other opinion on the matter is nothing but ignorance, as is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 13.8.12. On the other hand, okay, so, okay, so here we're also establishing that everybody has their opinion, right? Then you have, God's opinion. So this idea that there's so many options. Yes, there are so many options, but that's based on it not being God's opinion. Right? If we want to know the absolute, there's only one opinion. Right? That's God's opinion. But God's opinion, because He is the creation, so everything is, it's so great that it can apply to every aspect of His creation. But one has to accept that one has to look for the variety and the practical application within God's opinion, not within our opinion. It may look the same, but that's why one has to be able to tell the difference. Right? We discussed right the other day about, you know, why something is good or bad? Didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the point is that you're a modern religionist or moralist, judicialist? You know? That these persons, why do they have that opinion? You know what I'm saying? The modern person, why do they say it's not good to steal? They'll say it's obvious, or it's not nice, or it's not good, or you hurt the other person, or but did you hear anything about Krishna in all of this? No, nothing. So that's why the devotee has to know knowledge and ignorance side by side. Because the point is it's not good because that's Krishna's opinion. Right? But to establish good and bad on your own opinion is useless. Now within Krishna's opinion, then we look at stealing. Right? Then you apply it. Right? Then we know stealing is bad, you know, unless you can get the maha without anyone catching you. Right? Because it's connected to Krishna, so you're actually attracted to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So that spontaneous attraction and endeavor then, you know, it's very much appreciated. Unless you get caught, and then you're in trouble. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's the idea, is that it's connected to Krishna. So, you have to look in one's own life of why do I do and why do I have the values that I have? Are they avidya or are they vidya? Are they knowledge or are they ignorance? Right? Because it won't do if it's ignorance. It won't work. It won't be applicable within the Vaishnav society. It will only create trouble. That Rupa Goswami says that. Right? Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatra, Vinim Vina. Right? So if it's not according to the Shruti, the Vedas, the Smriti, the tradition, the Pancharatra, or the rules and regulations, then it's an annoyance in the society of Vaishnavas. It's just an annoyance. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a problem to have an opinion and to be active and to apply it. Just make sure that your opinion's in line with the supreme opinion. Like that. Otherwise, it's a problem. Does that make sense? So that's what now we're bringing out, is that the knowledge in that you can tell the difference, and now we're applying it, because the real application is Krishna involved or not? Because the other, transcendental knowledge, not transcendental knowledge. Okay, we understand that. Okay, then, but here it's that connected to Krishna, not connected to Krishna. Because that's actually what defines avidya, or ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? Is that clear? Like that? Sure? Yes.
So the reason we have to know the ignorance and knowledge side by side is to be able to distinguish between which is vidya and avidya, and practice vidya.
Yes. Yes, you want to know so you can practice it. Because otherwise then one may make the mistake, because vidya and avidya can actually look exactly the same. You know what I'm saying? You have an apple, it's sitting on the counter. So is it vidya or avidya? How do you discern? Yeah, if it's offered or not. But even if it's not offered, the concept that it could be offered is still vidya. But the concept that, oh wow, there's an apple, and just pick it up and eat it, that's avidya. Right? Because you're not connecting it to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why these things are important, that you can actually distinguish everything in your life that way. Is that okay? Yeah? Does that make sense? Okay. On the other hand, knowledge about the material creation, which describes the material objects as different energies of the Lord, meant to be engaged in His service, is useful for spiritual advancement. Srila Prabhupada explains in Renunciation Through Wisdom. So this is what is called aparavidya. The jivas, being a product of the spiritual energy, try to exploit the material energy, but ultimately such attempts fail, because it is impossible for one energy to always exploit and lord it over another energy. But that's just the fact, right? Like that. So that's that right there, that point there, destroys the concept that I'm the controller and enjoyer, because you can't, one energy cannot always be in control of another energy. It doesn't work. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. If you have a group of females, there always has to be something or someone that's prominent. Either something that everybody can get behind, some kind of third party, either as an object or a mood of enjoyment, or some individual has to be prominent, and that one can't be prominent all the time. Someone else at some point has to be prominent. It doesn't mean as far as who's the boss, but as far as who's getting the attention. Does that make sense? It can't be like, because there's no such thing as energy being constant. Krishna is constant, but his energies are not. right? They're always moving, always variety. So therefore, the jiva being energy cannot always be lord of material energy. At some point, material energy, you know, becomes lord, right? We want something to happen, we got it all lined up and done everything, and then it starts to rain. You know, so now who's boss? You know, so like that. So that's what's happening. So there's always going to be this flow and interaction like that. Right? So that progressive interaction, that pleases Krishna. Because all of his energies are meant for his pleasure. So therefore, if all the energies cooperate together for Krishna's pleasure, that's what makes them happy. Right? Why did Krishna disappear from the rasa dance? Because the gopis weren't qualified? No, they were all qualified. Right? You know, it said that they were the most qualified girls in the cosmic creation. It doesn't say universe, it says cosmic creation. But the problem was, is each one of them thought they were the center of attention. They weren't cooperating. And Krishna wants to be able to dance with Radharani. Right? In the middle. And from there, then see the expansions of that, of Krishna dancing with everybody else. That's fun. Right? Because all the gopis will be expansions of Radharani. So then they can watch that. They themselves can enjoy it and watch all the expanded. Does that make sense? But they each thought they were the special one. Right? So then it had to be proven that, no, Radharani's the special one. Does that make sense? Then they're all cooperating together, then you can have the rasa dance. Does this make sense? So this whole point, if there isn't cooperation, if there isn't proper etiquette, if there isn't proper understanding and interaction, then Krishna's not happy. Because it's all his energies. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so then we'll stop here and then continue. On Monday, right?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.
I'm going to try to get through the rest of it next week. Oh, you mean to me, or you'll present to the class? Oh,
okay.
Oh, the thematic of the what do you call it? Tantra Sutras. Okay, great, thanks. Okay, yeah, no, nice. Very good, yeah. Because by the looks of it, we could. Finish next week.
4 pages.
Yeah, the Upanishad. You should finish on Monday reading that, and then you can get your depending on how to do the class or not, and then we'll try to do those others over that and conclude on Friday. Something like that. Then when we open, we can do that. Still,
that
okay. The verses in this section, whatever it is, I think it was 11:14. You could, please, but probably do them in those groups. Yeah. Yeah, means, you know, the 1 to 3 I think you have, and the, you know, the 5 to 8, whatever it is like that, you have how you would divide it up. And then come up to this to the 14, then we'll do the last, and then you can give something over the whole thing. Okay, yeah, okay.